Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Cultimatum, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And tonight with me is Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. I am so excited. We have our first guest that is actually from my cult, the House of Yahweh. Our guest is going to go by the name of Harry, and his voice will be altered to protect his identity, but Harry is going to share his story and his own personal experiences with the House of Yahweh and how that went for him. So welcome to the show, Harry.
Thank you.
Okay, so my first question is, only because we probably should have asked this beforehand, Harry, are you still in the House of Yahweh?
No, I am not, but I have a lot of people close to me who still are, which is why my voice is being distorted. And everybody's in their own journey as far as, because there are people who are still like in the process of leaving or coming to their realization. But me being too forceful, in my opinion, or pushing another agenda, it's like, for instance, would have a knee-jerk reaction of making them go in the other direction.
Yeah. Okay, no, totally understandable. So, we are going to hide your anonymity. We're going to alter your voice, and so you're totally safe. But
okay.
I just wasn't clear whether or not where you stood with the House of Yahweh. Okay, Melody, it's all yours.
Okay, well, go ahead, Harry. I'm going to let you start by telling your story, and telling us how and when you joined the House of Yahweh, how you got involved.
I joined back, I would say, summer of 95. The way in which I joined, I was part of a rather large group, and the pastor of our group just had a moment of, I guess you can call it clarity or whatever you want to call it. He came across some literature, went, prayed, and just prayed and asked, is Yahweh your name? Should we be joining this group? And he came back and said the answer was yes. So a big part of our group had been a teaching of the concept of submission. The way we define submission is buying in. The leader says, we'll be head of household, leader of the group. We're going in this direction. Everybody buys into the nth degree. So we came back and said, we're going this direction. Everybody just turned in that direction and started going. And we started picking up the material. What led me to want to join? At that point, it was not so much, it's not starting anything about the leader, Israel Hawkins, or anything like that. When our leader said, check this out, David went with a completely open mind, and I viewed it as a group that was closer to what I was looking for, what I was expecting out of religion, as far as they taught the game of not just having faith, but showing it by actions. So that appealed to me, and that led to me getting baptized. Now, of course, during the baptism, they asked the question, do you believe Israel Hawkins is, no, what is it, the witness, or the one sent to whatever. Really didn't care, so I was kind of little, yes, getting baptized, yes, I'll go along with that. So, in all honesty, I just didn't know, and what he called himself, I didn't care about, if that makes sense. It was a bit out there for me, so I'll say it like that. It was always a bit out there, but the whole time I was there, I never met him one time.
Wow.
The group we were with was very fervent. We were very dedicated. I do believe that. I didn't start, changing my opinion of things until right around 2000. There was a change in teaching. Up until that point, somebody wanted to get married or something, meet with your local elder, they approve of it, they go ahead and marry. All of a sudden, things changed, and it was, no one's getting married unless Israel Hawkins approves of it, and it goes through this process. And then they brought in the whole concept of a bride price. Man, pay so much money in order to marry somebody. So with that being said, now you have young men more or less selling themselves into slavery for the right to marry someone because they want to do things in the right way until we would get into. And two, you now have a small group of men, the elders, who could have more than one wife, playing middleman, and Israel Hawkins making the final decision on who can marry who. So if you have a small group of people controlling who can marry who, and according to their teaching, this same small group of people can marry more than one wife, them and their sons got the first choice on who was marrying who. And everybody else, to a degree, had to beg, plead, cry, jump up and down, stand on one leg, and really, I mean, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, go to death for the right to marry the choice woman. This was not fair. You want me to stop or keep going?
Did you have a question, Andrew?
Keep going. Yeah. No.
So that was my first time seeing things and going, something's not quite right here. It was the point where I was, say, more or less in the early betrothal counseling. No, actually, betrothal counseling with an attractive young lady in New York. And what I didn't know was going on behind the scenes was every time I called to say hi, her mother's in the background going, "Why are you talking to him? Don't you know Israel Hawkins is interested in you?" And the elders who were counseling us, whenever I wanted to call for counseling, all of a sudden, they weren't available. But the wives were always available to talk to the girl I was interested in, and they would kind of drop the hint, "We didn't see if the call was at all. I'm calling on a regular basis, maybe they're not available." So, to make a long story short, we wound up going our separate directions. She thought I wasn't serious, and she was being fed information behind the scenes. She had two elders, one being a local elder, and then Israel Hawkins trying to pursue after her, and it was just too much. So she left. It was upsetting. Go ahead.
Oh, I do have a question. And obviously, to the audience, this is because this is the cult I was in, so I know information. Is this about the time that they put the wall up dividing the men and women? How did the wall that went up dividing the men and women, what time period was that in recollection with, like, the requesting, having to get permission to get married and stuff? How did that fit into all that?
When this teaching I was just talking about came up roughly around 99, 2000, roughly speaking. The wall went up, I want to say 2003. Things just got...
Okay, so it was after.
A bit interesting, we came to face. There was this, yes, the wall went up shortly after. But it was further going along the same mentality in the fact that they didn't want the men to look at the women at all. Now, with that being said, Then all of a sudden, the elders chose who was going to interact with who. And beyond that, you didn't know who was on the other side of the wall at all. So it gave them more control. And from some of the things I was being told was, for those who were in other groups, it kind of cut down on people doing what they weren't supposed to. So that was still going on behind the scenes. So to a degree, it was all about control. They wanted to control the men, control who married who, and limit things. Now, there were side effects from that. That's going off into another tangent that I can get into later. But that process, and it was really more or less like you had to go through a whole lot in order to buy a wife, just was a bit of a turnoff. Shortly after those teachings changed, because I went to my local elder, and they were like, well, we went to Israel. He said, wait. Now, crazy thing about it is, there are other elders who were on welfare, had 3 and 4 wives, putting them in travel trailers. And here I am, the time, let's say I'm about 21, 22. And I wasn't doing that bad for myself. I had to wait that he could have 4 or 5 wives. It just wasn't fair. So,
right.
It made me look at things a bit different. Around that time, or shortly after that, let's say about another year or two after, let's say 2002. So it was right after the major power outage in the Northeast. I don't know if you remember that.
Yep.
Yeah, the major blackout. But shortly after that, the Northern Elders got together and held a meeting. And now, in the group I was in, we had a very... It was what for a sacred tradition of after service, the men would meet down, men would meet off themselves, women meet off themselves. We'd have a very open discussion about scripture. Now, when I say it was very open, it wasn't blunts upon people using 4-letter words, but people were given, we all came up together, giving their real opinions. Now, people outside our group took that a bit offensive. They thought it was us challenging authority, but if you lot, honest understanding, you have to ask serious questions. Well, the groups, Lord and Elders, all got together, and one of the talks came up is, well, what if something actually happened to Israel? Do we have an order of who's going to be running things, what's going on? Because we don't want everything to fall apart. This question was brought up in Abilene, and all of the elders who were part of that meeting were thrown out. Elder very close to me was in that group. Actually, 2 elders very close to me were in that group. 1 elder was there. The other elder was thrown out by, so called it guilt by association. He was not there, but he was close to everyone else that was there. Shortly after that, of course, these elders that were thrown out actually held a protest right outside the gates. Big service was held, and the congregation more or less laughed at the fact that these people were no longer part of the group and they were going ahead. Those of us who were outside of Abilene and we were close to these people, I didn't know what to do. But it was another big door open going, something might not be quite right here. When one of the elders that was very, very close to me left, my part of his extended family left, because all of his immediate brothers and sisters were in the house except one, and quite a bit of his extended family was. Quite a few of them left, a few stayed. My parents stayed, and a few left from our group. But it shook things very thoroughly. After seeing these 2 things, my dad pulled me aside one day and just said, I know you want out, don't go yet. It will be too much too much on my mom and dad, and it would just cause too much confusion. So I waited till they moved to Abilene, and I said, yep, this is about my time, because this is not working for me. And that was around 2005 when I left. It wasn't a thing I got kicked out of, just one day. It's really not working. I don't have to stare my parents in the face and figure out how we're going to continue to interact now that I'm gone, because the normal rules were, someone left, these people are going to hell, there's nothing left for them but to drag you to hell with them, so they had nothing else to do with. So it's kind of hard when you're living in the same house with your parents. Maybe we were in the same house, okay, we can go our separate ways. I knew the rules, so I just left. It hurt, but I just left. So that was my adventure there. Any questions you might have? But I can go over that side effect of the law, but that's another thing. Go ahead.
My question is, what did you see as far as some of the results of some of these restrictions and changes in the teachings that were happening? How did this affect, especially, and I kind of know some of the answer to this, but the young men in the group?
That's an excellent question. Hold on, I won't give you an accurate answer.
Okay.
I knew, like I say, people I interacted with, we'll say well over 40 young men in my age group, at least four, maybe 30. But I knew quite a few men in my age group. Of those people, only the ones who lived in Adelaide actually got married. If they did. Quite a few did. People lived in Adelaide. All those who were living remote of Adelaide and didn't have the, say, right behind the kiss or right in road, they still single to this day. To this day, still single. The vast majority. So it affects me. These most of men are decent young men, got great jobs, very well-meaning. It's just, in addition to this, after quite a few of us left, things got worse. Bestiality wound up becoming an issue in the house. Men couldn't look at the woman. Thinking of the woman was deemed a sin. It got to that extreme. I've heard of at least two episodes, and one of them, it's a bit disturbing. So you want to know the extremes? It was very much a thing of looking at the woman, thinking of the woman as evil. They didn't, so their attention went elsewhere. So it was a really negative effect on the young man. And instead of, this is one of the big things, we also had a discussion among the men. If you want the men to go along the program, teach them. You don't have to control them. Some things don't come from controlling them, as eventually they're going to go off and do what they want to do anyway. But if you teach them what the right way is, we have to deal with these issues. They didn't teach, they controlled. So there was a lot of negative stuff came from it. Quite a few, when they left, I called it the boomerang, not boomerang, the, forget the thing now, pendulum. People went from one side, it's very extreme, wild child. And then eventually over time, some found the center again. But quite a few of those young men, when they went through the wild child phase, some of them wound up in jail. It was just, they went from an ultra-controlled atmosphere to the outside world has no controls. If, remember, another issue was quite a few of the young men were not educated. Those living in the Abilene area, public education is frowned upon. The reason being that they didn't want the children being taught about Christmas. They didn't want the children being taught about Easter. They just want children to learn their math and whatnot. And the fact that it was kind of, you understood that public schools might go along with celebrating some of these holidays. They just didn't send the children. But what wound up happening was, although officially they were being homeschooled, quite a few of these young men didn't really get that much education at all, say beyond fifth or sixth grade. So you now have people who mean well, haven't been taught, and it's kind of we've seen this in Oakland many a times. If the people don't have an education or a decent way to get money, they're going to go to crime in some other way because they just want to live a certain way. So I can think of, hold on, top of my head, one, two, at least five that wound up inside folk. At least five.
It wound up inside what? Could you repeat that?
Inside jail.
Oh,
and prison for extended sentences. I'm thinking of one right now, but I know at least got 15 years. Not those who've just been in long.
Wow.
So it had some negative effects. It's just being ultra controlled. Did it really change the men that much? No, in the end, those who want to do something will do what they want to do. you can teach. So I was saying, it's much easier to help someone form an opinion than it is to get them to change their mind once they made it up. So that's why it goes back to, you can teach the people, help them form an opinion all the way through things. Once they made up their mind, I'm going this way, there's a bunch of people. So that just wound up being the case with a lot of young men. They just went off and people went through their wild child things. Of course, I went through and some split.
Oh, I was just going to say, in the same breath, how did you see this affect the young women? What was the result for them, for most of them?
Well, I'm going to tell you a very disturbing joke that was often said in the group that I was in. That was very much the mentality of the House of Yowen. So I'm warning you, that's a disturbing joke. But the view towards a lot of the women were, they were old enough to believe, they're old enough to breathe. It is a disturbing joke, but that was kind of the attitude they had. I know women getting married as early as age 15, 16. It was actually a big commonplace.
Harry, I've heard that same joke in different different contexts.
I understand.
But the same,
And it's sad that we're in a religious setting, but that's the one women attitude taken toward the women. But as soon as they were of age, now understand, because those in charge had 4 and 5 wives, and I think you can think of at least one in that group, you may have known one. He's not around here anymore. He's still alive. He's not around here anymore. So those who, though quite a few who didn't have, so now you've got a bunch of much older men, I say much older, 50s, 60s, chasing up women who are under 20. They're just, after having served in HOI for so long, it's my turn now, I should get first pick. And they wanted that. So all the women who were in the groups that I associated with, they all got married before 20. Almost all. I know one exception. Take that back. One exception.
Were there any that were getting married before 18?
I can think of at least two up, three up top of my head. At least three.
And in the state of Texas, do they have to get the parents to sign off for that? But of course, obviously, if the parents are members, I'm sure that's not an issue.
They signed
sure
they up and
doing
especially
it,
depending on, because marrying who will end up being status symbol, women will be traded for a position. I hate to use, I mean, I'm just going to say it like it is. They got a daughter, ooh, I can help me get in, great this elder, maybe I can get an eldest position at some point in time. That was the mentality. Which was
so
the
they were using their daughter to elevate their own positions.
One of the reasons why. When I was talking to a young lady in New York, all the elders wanted her. So, of course, why would back in the background, why are you talking to him? Even her own mother was asking this question. And it wasn't that it was something wrong with me. It's just, there's an elder there. Why would you talk to this lovely person over here?
I'm going to insert a statement here that is not my opinion and it is not my belief, but in the course of history, going back, let's just pick a number, 2,000 years, 1,000 years, around the world, in many cultures, Africa, Middle East, I'm not going to cite anymore because I don't want to be misquoted. Biologically, when a woman is ready to when she can become impregnated, biologically, and they, in the cultures, they would, and plus back then, maybe 1,000 years ago, they only lived to 30 or 40. So getting somebody pregnant or married at 12 or 13 was common.
Agreed.
But as our society matured over the millennium, many millennium, and we got together, we realized that children should not be having children because they cannot raise children properly. And then it became, whether it's this country or pick any other country, it then became, so especially in cults, the cults still practice that procedure where, if like you said, if she's old enough to bleed, she's old enough to breed. In the United States, that's no longer acceptable, except in the cults. And I guess they get a religious pass on that. And this goes back to one of my rants since I started this podcast, is that why law enforcement can't do something about this? Because a 12-year-old should not be being impregnated by a 40 or 50-year-old, because in his mind, correct me if I'm wrong, Harry, but these are breeding grounds for pedophiles.
Yes.
Am I not?
Yes.
Okay.
It's very much breeding grounds for pedophiles. And to a degree, when you also add the fact that the men are allowed to have more than one wife, those who, I mean, it uses this breeding ground period. Man want to have a bunch of women. He aspired for the oldest position. And then all of a sudden, he got as many women as he could put in the house. Put a roof over them. And a roof is a very vague term. The longest you put them in a place where they had their own roof, that's considered acceptable.
And that, too, is practiced still to this day around the world.
Yes.
But, again, in a society like ours, we got together and said, no, this is not acceptable, except maybe, am I correct that in Utah, the Mormons can still do that legally?
Yes, in Utah, okay. And I think some other groups that are close to it, they often turn a blind eye.
But they're hiding behind religion, so the children are having children. You know, sometimes you'll hear on the news, I don't know, you'll hear 12-year-olds getting pregnant, but they're getting outside of a cult. You hear them getting pregnant because they had sex at a young age, they didn't practice contraception, and then they, as horrible as it sounds, this is how they find babies in toilets and dumpsters. But these cults have, again, I'm repeating myself, they're hiding behind the cult so they can get away with this.
Yes. So they're saying, again, putting a roof over somebody's head is a vague term. And with that being a vague term, there's some men who did the absolute bare minimum. I mean, as close to the bare minimum as they could get. So while they're keeping to the official rules, are the women really being treated properly? Two, if they haven't, women are not been, let's say, going through the proper levels of education or maturing, they are very much completely, absolutely dependent upon that man who's now signed up to take care of them. And the possibility for abuse is just, I mean, it's very much elevated, and it went on to the nth degree. So now you have people, that's what I'm not saying this happened to everybody. There are some who took great care of their wives, but this was not everybody who did this. Some, quite a few women left for the reason, you know, being abused. They were being beaten or something along those lines, and it was just got to the point where they just couldn't take it.
Well, and of course, again, we're seeing that in Afghanistan. Now that we're out of there, the Taliban took back over again, and women are being beaten. And I don't want to get too much off the beat topic, but when I hear that happening in Afghanistan, it's a third world country, and there's nothing that I can do about it. But when I hear it's happening here in our own backyard, in our own country, and they're, again, hiding behind religion, and then they can abuse children and abuse women and make them wear, I don't know if they call them burqas in these religions, but basically
it wasn't called that, but it was very much close to it.
Very much close to it. Again, it's just hiding behind these religions, and for those who've listened to this podcast, you know that I try to restrain myself because I get a good, I don't understand why we don't do something about this. It's despicable. Sorry.
I understand. I agree with you. it is very challenging. As people might say, well, why else am I go along with this? The fear of going to hell will compel you to do some extreme things that go along with a lot of stuff you might question. So we have to, again, people have to be educated. You do that. If you're doing righteousness, there should not be a necessity to have that level of control. And that's one of the things, again, we see sometimes in third world countries. Women can't be educated past, say, elementary school, or they can only do this, that, and other. If you're teaching people to live righteously, why are you truly afraid of them learning? Why are you afraid of them executing the things that they should be being taught? Or is this, again, what it truly is about? Control. So that's really what it came down to. It was more control. You can hide behind a religion, say this, that, other, but very often is they want to control the people. When you control the people, you can do almost whatever you want. And one of the problems with that, which is one of the other issues that became more apparent over time, absolute power absolutely corrupts. And you have a group of men who, to at least their surroundings and their environment, they have absolute power. Yeah, over time they
can
corrupt to a degree.
I have another question. Not just this religion or cult, but in many of the episodes that we recorded, we hear the same thing. There are elders or men who abuse children or abuse their wives. Do you think, and I can ask you because you were there, and I don't know where your mindset was 10 years ago, but from what I understand from Melody and many other survivors, there is this lake of fire that if you commit a sin, you are going to that lake of fire. And apparently that was something they instilled in many people, so they would keep them in line. Do you think these men who raped these young children or beat their wives knew that they were doing wrong and didn't care about this lake of fire? Or it just seems to me that if I was in an organization and I was doing something that, come on, I think we all know in the back of our minds that abusing a 12, 13-year-old is wrong. If you tell me that if I do, I grew up in the Catholic Church, and I was told about, if you don't go to confession and tell your sins, you're going to hell, you know? And so for a lot of my childhood and young and teenage years, I believed that. I'm going to not necessarily call the Catholic Church a cult, but they border on it because they taught some of this same stuff. But I was able to walk away from that and just say, hogwash, none of this is true, or I'm not going to hell, you know. You see where I'm going here?
So
do you think some of these men knew what they were doing was wrong?
The answer is, on some level, very likely yes. But the thing is that when you could excuse it or say someone justified it as, one of the big things is people are very hesitant to get in the middle of someone else's household. I understand that. I respect that. But if you see something wrong, you have to at least say something. It's difficult in the fact that, because one of the things I've had to go through, my own deep thought, my own meditation after having left, is the place of religion in our society and our culture. I do believe there's a place, because in the same way that we go to school to learn how to function our society, the math, the arithmetic, the reading, science. There also must be a teaching of some sort of why to do things in a respectful manner. A general concept of the morals of trying to teach people the way you want to be taught. Now, the thing is that when you have people who, we can start off with that, call it glittering generality. Sometimes that's what they call it in psychology. You can have this glittering generality. Yes, we're going to do this. And then go off on an extreme tangent depending on how you interpret these words. Now, when I first joined, everything seemed kosher and together. But it wasn't until after you escape, you get inside and see inside how things are working, okay? We just kind of went off on a tangent here and here. And one of the things I do hold dear to is that those who teach to follow the scripture is written in two places in Deuteronomy and Revelation. Do not add to nor take away from this. Now, with that being said, when people start adding their own tangent of we should do things in this way, we should do things in that way, and all of a sudden, thus saith the Heavenly Father, now all of a sudden you got all people, we got to do it this way, because he just found this interpretation of scripture, but in all honesty, it came out the, they call it the 23rd chapter of the imagination. If you don't have anybody to verify this, to go back and double check, is this really the right thing you should be doing? Whoever's making these decisions, they can come up with these declarations and say whatever they want. So while you might have people who are very fervent, I'm not going to say that people there are evil. No, quite a few of them are very well-meaning. You can be very well-meaning and yet be wrong. It's an unfortunate fact, but it's very true. That's right. What a lot of people fall into that category. For those who knew what they were doing, knew they were saying the wrong thing and allowed it, those people are truly evil. But you can say, sometimes the word abuse could be a vague term. Now, we know this to mean physical abuse, there's mental abuse, there's verbal abuse. But someone else may take a less open view on it and just say, well, if you weren't hit, he didn't abuse. So now you're free to get talk to his woman and his children however he wants to. And they were running wild with this. So we have to, those who are in authority have to be very careful of how they do things. It's one of the reasons why I never wanted the job. There's a lot of responsibility that goes along with it. And what we had in the House of Yahweh was some who had some great concepts. I do believe the creator's name is Yahweh. But took this and said, well, we're the only ones, they literally copyrighted the name. So we're the only ones who must be the House of Yahweh they're talking about here. So we make it up as we go along, and it must be right because our name is mentioned in Scripture. So there must.
Yeah.
It's a bit
this
long.
Is why my personal belief about the Bible is it's just a book that was written over 2,000 years, and it has been transcribed and rewritten and transposed and translated 100,000 times. And I think the original context of the Bible that was written by the apostles and disciples and Moses, you know, everybody, I don't think it's that old thing where if I whisper something into Melody's ear and she whispers it to your ear and you whisper it back, you know, by the time the fifth person hears it, it's changed completely.
Yes.
And it's that's the way I see the Bible. I don't think the Bible that we know today is anywhere close to where it was, you know, 1,000 years ago.
There were
ago.
A lot of different translations, and we can go over how, say, I mean, we can go for days about the King James Version or some of the others. Some of them were deliberately translated in a way to fit people's personal or their political
Correct.
Agenda. So in the general concept of the book, do I agree with the concepts being taught? Understand, we've outgrown some of the concepts being taught because slavery was upheld in the laws in the Old Testament. We don't practice slavery
yeah.
anymore. We don't say, go off and we want someone of our enemies. We like that woman over there. Go steal her from our enemy camp, have her shave her head, and then all of a sudden she's mine now. We don't keep to these things. This is stuff that was taught in the scripture. So we, as a people, so humanity has matured some. But the book that we hold to still teaches principles that they kept to over 2,000 years ago. There has to be a way in which to bridge that gap. Again, I believe morals should be taught, but we should be able to do it in a way that isn't borderline crazy in violence.
Right.
Because
yeah.
some stuff I just went over, talk about it now, slavery was legal. That slavery was legal in the scripture.
The Egyptians used slavery.
They used slavery. But we've seen the horrors of it in America, and we've seen the horrors of it in the North and South America. With the whole principle behind that was a religious reason why they did that. They went to the Catholic Church. These people over here don't believe what we believe. Can we enslave them? Let's look in Scripture. Hey, slavery is legal. Do what you want to do it. they took them from Africa and turned them into slaves. The Pope went along with this.
Yeah, well, we've had a slew of very bad popes over the millennium. The only thing that I ever took away from the Bible that I wouldn't say that I necessarily live by, but I believe in, are the Ten Commandments. Because the Ten Commandments were technically brought down off the mountain by Moses on tablets and said, this is God's will, you know. And so, do not covet thy neighbor's wife, which is like, you shouldn't have an affair. Thou shalt not murder. Thou shalt not use God's name in vain. But although I'm very guilty of that. So, God damn it. That's using God's name in vain.
Well, there's a very often a debate between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Now, let's say, for instance, the letter of the law, if you borrow something from somebody and it becomes damaged, according to Old Testament law, you're responsible to replace this. Now, things like this, I go along with. The spirit, though, this is talking about this letter of the law is going over a person's pig, their farming tool. But we have to understand what the general concept is within the spirit of the law they're trying to do. You borrow something, repel it, and it's damaged, replace it. Treat other people's stuff like your own. This is really getting into the spirit of what it is. But to go through and just say everything, the lot we've outgrown. So it's above my pay grade to pick and choose. But I think we've matured to a degree where we can say some of the stuff we've learned, we can let it go. Now, I disagree, and I've done some study because even some of the apostles in the time disagreed with Paul because Paul was the one who was saying the law was done away with. They called him into Jerusalem, said, what are you saying? And he corrected that, no, action, for the faith without sin is dead. faith without works is dead. So there is a middle ground here. Yes, we're forgiven for our sins. I believe perfection is perfection. When I say perfection, doing the best we can to treat other people the way we want to be treated. Doing the best we can to live an upright and upstanding life. That is a daily goal. And I don't believe there should be a lack of effort towards trying to achieve it or trying to do these things. So some will say, well, the law is done away with. We don't have to do anything. Just, again, a glittering generality. We say just treat your brother the way you want to be treated. Jeffrey Dahmer ate people. So is he doing that? Or did he do the law the same way? We have to have a clarification on what these things are.
Right.
Unless Melody has a question, I would like to kind of fast forward a little bit. When did you walk away from the house of Yahweh and why? And where are you today?
When I walked away in 2005, so I was there about 10 years. In the end, a very good friend of mine presented me with an argument that I couldn't come up with a decent answer for, so it's kind of set me on the path to eventually let me go. What happened was quite a few young people around my age group, actually, because the elders were not saying, coming up with a decent answer who can marry who. It wasn't coming up with one that people could go along with. So some people, they saw somebody who was outside the house, Yahweh, said, hey, why don't you come to what I believe and check it out? And instead of walking with open arms, they were run off because they wanted complete control. The elders did, and they wanted to consider who they were talking about. Don't bring somebody else new in. So my friend came in one day and goes, you know you're never getting into married in the house of Yahweh. We've already seen this. We've gone through this process. Yes. If you marry somebody outside the house of Yahweh, they're going to kick you out. Yes. Why don't you just leave under your own terms? And at that point, I didn't have an answer to that. It's kind of like, the day is numbered when I'm not going to be here anymore. So that was a big issue. Again, there were a lot of bigger political things. Israel Hawkins is doing this, this, and this. I mean, shortly after I left, because you did get wound up in jail. But for me, that was the question that it was enough to make me go, yep, this time I'm going to get kicked out eventually. It is the foregone conclusion. And this was not about me being not being perfect. When there was an outreach program, I led the outreach program for the area I was in. It was not about me not believing. It was just that they were not taking care of the young people. And they were not doing the job of making sure there was a righteous path for people to do what they wanted to do. So to a degree, I looked at it as they failed the people, the elders did. Now, shortly after that, the degree to which they did became very much more obvious. Because there were a lot of things I was not aware of. There was child labor abuse going on. That was the only charge that stuck, actually. That was definitely going on. Where, when I say child labor abuse, people under 18 working all day long on the farm and being paid what they called a blessing. Because you get paid money, you can get taxed money. They were simply given a blessing of food. And that was it. Or maybe something just barely resembling a shelter. Again, if you have the men just barely operating and what living in a shelter, they're not getting paid to work if they're working for the House of Yahweh. They definitely couldn't afford a wife, so they would have a lot of, and that's one of the big issues. A lot of the men, they just wanted to live a peaceful life, have somebody decent in the world, and go along with things. And that was just being denied. While at the same time, those who had 4 or 5 were just, I mean, I don't even know how to say the things, we'll say your daddy was accused of on the air. It was just grotesque and disturbing. So you got people abusing the blessing they've been given, whereas others being just given the whole thing, oh, you're just fine. Yes, essentially, you're going to lose the people. And then when you're on the outside looking in, like, oh, wow, I went along with this. That was crazy. That was crazy. Well, they're really going off the deep end now. Once they go off the deep end, after I left, things got more extreme regarding the separation of men and women. And yes, someone young who was around me, who had been there the whole time when I was away for a while, from back near the headquarters, they told me stories of, well, that young man over there, well, he got it on with a goat. So it's just, there were side effects of this whole thing and the fact that it affected the mentality of the men. And now you got men off and they're disturbed now. And all I needed was a decent, righteous outlet to go ahead and settle down. I think it's, and this is something I lost some friends for saying it out loud in the wrong setting, but we've had too many generations lost for not being educated and not being given a path where they can truly succeed. You have intelligent people who, if they'd have stayed in their politics, were working on a farm, who are now doctors and lawyers. They were capable. They just weren't put in a position where they could succeed. In a lot of ways, that's child abuse. If you Absolutely. Deliberately limit what a child is capable of, they might be capable of, say, achievements on the level of 100. But because of the environment they put in, their greatest achievement may only live up to a 50 because they just weren't given the tools in order to succeed. That's a waste of a life. And there were many that were just wasted. So while some things on paper, the glittering generalities, may have sounded really great, and they were enough to get us to come in the door and sit on a pew for a while, they weren't, I mean, one of the biggest things. The House of Yahweh now is a bunch of older people and not a lot of young people at all.
Yeah. Melody, you have a question?
I know what was avoiding, and I'm going to call it out, and I'm going to call a spade here. Yedidia is a member who is in prison for child sex abuse. So let's just say what it is. I'll say it. I'll be the one to say it. I'm going to go on my own rant here. They tried to hide it. They tried to handle it internally, like so many of the other cults that we interview and talk to. They tried to handle it internally. And the reason that these groups and these organizations
from jail.
Which is just disgusting, right?
Yes.
So, and what really, really pisses me off about this is that the reason they do this, and the reason they want to handle it internally and they don't want outside authorities involved is because the reputation of the organization is more important yeah. than the lives of the most innocent members of the organization. And if you cannot see that that's a problem in your organization, then I don't know what will wake you up. If that statement alone does not make you say that this does not make sense, that we are protecting the reputation at the expense of our most innocent members, That was my rant.
Okay. And Melody, I do this every episode, but it's my only experience with religious, organized religion is the Roman Catholic Church. And when I was growing up, I didn't know because maybe it was kept from me. And I was an altar boy and a choir boy, and I was never abused. But as I grew older and got into my 20s, and my parents sent me to a religious, I went to two different Catholic colleges. And it was then, and after I graduated, that I started hearing about the abuse from the priests. And I actually one day sat down and said, do I have a repressed memory? Because either the priest didn't find me attractive and didn't want nothing to do with me. But I walked away from the Catholic Church because I said, and I know many people will argue this point, what God is going to allow this to happen? And then I went and worked for the Catholic Church. Ironically, I got a job, which I didn't really know at the time, but I was stationed in many of the Catholic dioceses here on the East Coast to raise millions of dollars for capital campaigns because they wanted to rebuild the rectory. They wanted to rebuild the football field. So they would go to the parishioners and ask for money. And I was stationed in, I won't name the diocese, but there was actual investigations of priests abusing boys then. And this was back in 1997 or something like that. So to both of your points is that I just walked away from the Catholic Church. Thankfully, they didn't drill in my head that if I left the Catholic Church that I was going to die of cancer or that I would, you know, I'd have a car accident or something. I just simply stopped going to church and stopped praying and stopped.
Right.
You know, I have my own faith today, my own spirituality, but my own higher power. But to both of your points, you're right. How do you not see what's going on? And anyway, I'm done with my rant.
Well,
okay. Yeah, go ahead, Harry, you can answer that, and then we're going to wrap it up.
If the same kind of rules apply in the fact that I have my own argument, what should Catholic priests be celibate? It kind of becomes a breeding ground for abuse or them looking towards someone else or something else. So in this case, it's a respectful way for people who, say, don't want to be ostracized because they might be gay or something. So they go become a priest. I mean, that's just kind of an excuse to me, but that's something that goes on. People are going, the first commandment was be fruitful and multiply. But the crazy thing is, in both of these situations, it's the control of that very first commandment that's got people going off the deep end in different directions.
Yep.
We should not have to micromanage. If we're going to operate in the way which the Creator did, does the Creator really micromanage everything that we do? No. He put us here to be free and decide to live righteous.
Right.
Why the organizations who are trying to teach people in the way in which whatever book he sent down, whether it be the Quran, the Bible, whatever, why they feel the need, if he's not micromanaging it, rather than they need to micromanage every single last aspect of people's lives, teach the people. If you teach people how to act right, they'll act right. If you truly teach them correctly. But the thing is, if these people are not being taught, they're just being said, just show up on a pew, give tithes on a regular basis, and go to heaven. I mean, back in the day, hundreds of years ago, Catholic Church sold indulgences. You committed a sin? Here, give me $50, you can go to hell, you can go to heaven. Spend a little bit of time in purgatory. The concept to us now sounds hilarious, but this was doctrine. We have to grow to a point of wanting to live right and getting beyond these things. And that's really the power of the cult, because you have some people who are very fervent. They really, really, really want to go to heaven. And I know somebody, you may have heard the story, that was close to me, really wanted to go to heaven, and was seeing disturbing things. He was having disturbing visions. And the scripture says, if your right eye offend you, better to pluck it out than and go to heaven with one eye than go to hell with two. He plucked his right eye out.
Oh, my God. Listen, if you believe in heaven, and I'm not going to give you my opinion on that, but if somebody believes in heaven, they want to go there. There is so many different ways of living your life. You can live your life according to the Ten Commandments. How many religions are there in the world that preach about? Yeah, that preach about heaven and hell. You can pick another religion that will guide you so you can have a spiritual life, and then when you pass from this earth, from this body into the spiritual world, you will go to heaven if that's what you believe. I don't know why these people stay in these cults, because if they think if they leave the cult, then they're going to go to the lake of fire. I'm going off on a tangent. Harry, where are you today? And I understand, and this is the, I think one of the reasons why Melody had you come on is that you are in touch with several people still.
Yes.
In the house of Yahweh. So how does that work for you?
First, it's kind of an unspoken thing. I don't say anything negative about what they believe in front of them. They don't discuss what I do in front of me, and we find peace in that whole thing.
That's good.
It's just, look, guys are fine with what you do. As long as you're happy, I'm happy. Do I agree with it? No. They don't agree with what I do. We'll call it a near-death experience a few years back. And after having gone through that, I'll tell you my own little joke that I say. That's kind of my own way of describing what happened to me. I got to the point where I was actually walked up to the Golden Gate and knocked on the door. I said, are y'all ready for me? They said, no, we're not ready. They sent me back down here, and I went back and said, are you sure? So, yeah, I it was pretty bad. But after having gone through that, it was like, okay, obviously, there must be some reason I'm here, otherwise they'd have kept, instead of going to hell now. And I came back better and went off to have quite a few achievements that I discussed some more offline. But I'm living my best life to the point where I'm satisfied. So how do I interact with those people? Well, one, it's kind of hard. I'm considered the oxymoron. A lot of people's view, because people did. There were sermons given up. That's what he got because he left the house of Yahweh for what happened to me. But I'm still here. And I'm doing fairly well, and knowing that I have my own level of success. So I'm not going to hell. We can have a discussion on what people have their views on, what I'm supposed to be, how I'm supposed to live, whatnot. But I'm here. And I appreciate being here and living the best life I can. Having gone through what I go through, where am I mentality-wise? To the best of my ability, to treat people the way I want to be treated. I consider the fact that I'm still here a blessing, so I do the best I can never do anybody wrong, because I think that's a waste of the blessing I've been given. Back into organized religion after my adventures in the house of Yahweh? I can't right now. It's not me.
Okay. I have, and I just recently voiced this on another episode. I have the mantra of live and let live, and it sounds like that's kind of like your mantra. And then I like what you said about treat others like you would want them to treat me. And I think that kind of, so live and let live, and treat others like you would like
you
them to treat me.
Freed.
And if yeah. Right, and if we could all just do that, I think the world would be a better place.
Yes.
But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. Yeah.
Right.
Harry, thank you so much for joining us today. Again, Millie, do you have anything you want to say?
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you so much, Harry, for coming on the show and for sharing your story with us today. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, really, very. I know you're anonymous, and I know you took a big risk coming on here, but we will do our best to hide your anonymity.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. All right, everybody.
Thank you.
By the time the audience hears this, they will hear, hopefully I will do better than a chipmunk, because my last episode, he was a chipmunk. But
you've learned a little since then.
I learned a little since then. Maybe we'll make him a duck this time or something. So,
thank you, Harry.
Thank you, Harry. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for that. Bye.
We want to thank Harry so much for coming on the show and sharing his story. Obviously, this was a little bit more personal for me because Harry's from my cult and I have personal experience and personal feelings attached with this. And I'm going to say that one of the things that I'd written down that I kind of wanted to talk more about while we were interviewing Harry is after I left, the House of Yahweh built a wall in the sanctuary where they literally, with a wall, I think it's a metaphor too, but they built a wall between the men and the women, dividing them. And that was brought up during the interview. And I didn't say as much as I wanted to say about that because they give some really, I'm going to call them stupid reasons for building this wall. They were saying that it was because there was adulterous affairs going on and people were sleeping with other people's spouses. And
I remember that. Yep.
I'm going to call bullshit on all of that. I really think the real reason they put that wall up is because the older men did not wanted full access to the young girls and they did not want the young girls to see the young men. And it was a way of them controlling who these young girls were going to marry. It was all about control. And they did not want these young girls to see, you know, they didn't want an 18-year-old girl seeing, you know, an 18 to 20-year-old guy, which is who she would most likely be attracted to, not the 60, 70-year-old guy that is, you know, one of the elders that already has 17 wives. You know, she doesn't want to be wife number 18th if she thinks she can be wife number one to some younger guy. So I just wanted to do my little rant on that. And that also, and I've talked about this a little bit before, but it also was very damaging to the young men in this group because a lot of them, you know, wanted to get married, wanted to stay there and ended up leaving and running off. And they ran off. They had very little education, very little skills, and they had to put their lives back together. The ones who stayed, I don't even know how most of them are doing or where most of them are, but because I think most of the younger men were run off, the ones that were there still after that, which I know happens in other cults where they do this multiple marriage thing too, because the men, the older men that are in power, then want to run off the younger men. It's by design. And then the other thing I want to rant about, Andrew, is again, and I said this during the interview, but I'm going to say it again. It just irks me to no end that, and if you remember in our interview with Richard, and he, at the end of his interview, he said something that was really enlightening. And he said, if you want to know whether or not an organization is a cult or it's dangerous or how they're going to treat their members, look at how they treat their children. Look at how the children in that group are treated.
Right.
And I thought it was such an enlightening statement because the House of Yahweh is a perfect example of that because they literally will not report crimes against children because the reputation of the organization is more important than the most innocent members of the group. And that is, need I say any more about where their priorities are?
This is my, I'm not going to call it rant, but this is just my perspective on it. When I first did the Twin Flames, I was outraged, blah, blah, blah. And if the audience knows the story, that's how this podcast came to be. And we're now up to, 26, 27 episodes? And every single episode that we have done, maybe barring one or two, there has been abuse of children.
Yep.
And now I'm a parent, and how do I put this? I was lucky to have three boys, but I've never had a daughter.
Yep.
And so I don't know what it's like to have a daughter that. So when you hear these stories about these men in these cults going after younger women, if I was in a cult, I just know that I would, There's an old adage that some men say, you know, when men have daughters at birth, and they say when she becomes a teenager, I'm handcuffing her to the radiator so she never can get out. You know, it's a joke sometimes
locking
you hear.
Her up, yeah.
Right, I'm locking her up in the basement or something. But that's a joke, but it's the man saying there'll never be an opportunity for another man to decimate my daughter, whatever.
Right.
And now I am a grandparent and I do have a granddaughter. Mm. And it just bothers me that this is, so now we're going to segue into the law enforcement. And, yes. And I realize that for the past couple of whatever, 15 episodes, I've been jumping on the law enforcement. And the interview we did last night, people haven't heard it yet, but the one we did with our first human trafficker, it turns out that it may not be just law enforcement. It is the social services. It is
the foster care system,
the hospitals. Yeah. This woman we interviewed, she was arrested multiple times. She was in and out of jail, and nobody took the time to wonder why a 14, 15, and 16-year-old girl was being arrested for drug possession and yada, yada, yada. So it just bothers me that, once again, we have an election coming up, and these two idiots are arguing. They're throwing insults at each other, but they're not talking. There was a day, I remember back when Ronald Reagan and some of the other, they would get up and they'd say, this is my platform. And Reagan talked about economics. And, you know, although I think Kamala Harris just talked about that she wants to lower grocery shopping bills. Yeah, I'm all for that because, you know, my groceries have doubled. But it's this stuff that's happening in our own backyard that I'm just flabbergasted that nobody's paying attention to this. And I don't know, maybe after a year of Cultimatum podcast, if we have a nice big following and maybe we can start a petition or some sort of move where we can get people to.
Andrew, I will tell you something that I don't think you and I have discussed before, is that a lot of us ex-members of the House of Yahweh actually believe that law enforcement in that area is actually being paid off to look the other way.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt that.
We believe that because even when things are, and they don't, they will flat out tell you if you call that they aren't going to go into the gates of their compound, that they don't do that. And I'm sure that that is because they must have some understanding or some, I don't know, some unwritten agreement with the House of Yahweh that they're not going to do that, at least not without permission. I would assume there's some exceptions to that because I know there was actually a murder there fairly recently, or a death there that they are now investigating as a potential murder, I should say. But they, I know the police did get called, but I think a lot of evidence was cleaned up before they were called. So there's a lot of also underhanded stuff going on behind the scenes.
There's so much corruptness.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. There's corruptness not only in the police, but there's corruptness in the politicians or the other side of the coin is there is evidence that Child Protective Services and social services and that whole fostering, they're all overwhelmed. There's so many children out there that need homes. And
yes. And I think they don't have enough casework too. Yeah.
That's my point. Right. Yeah. And when I see, and God bless them, but when I see a young couple go over to Russia or go over to China and they rescue a young woman or male boy and bring them back, that's nice. It's sweet. But there are too many children here in the United States that need a good home. So, all right.
Once again, we want to thank Harry for coming on the show and for sharing his story with us. And thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is always appreciated. If you could please just take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimatum Podcast. And I'm going to add again, we still need reviews. Folks, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would really, we know that we see the numbers. We know that we have, our following is growing. So please, Melanie and I urge, if you are listening and you are enjoying and you listen each week, please just take 2.5 minutes, go down and leave a review. I leave reviews all the time for podcasts, and it doesn't take very long. You just push 2 buttons, you hit the 5 stars, and you write a little blurb, and you're done.
Yes,
so,
we would
okay.
greatly
you
appreciate
can also,
that.
Oh. All right. Yeah. It's your turn.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
And you can also find us on other social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, and YouTube.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience you'd like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultomanumpodcast@gmail.com.
And if you are an ex-cult member looking for any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you're interested in hearing more from me, you can find me on my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make. And I'll just add that season 3 is starting in September. So I don't know when this airs, this particular episode will air, but we'll probably be well into season 3. But do check me out and
stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.
Until next week. Ciao.